This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The West Virginia House of Delegates passed a salary increase for teachers, school service personnel, and state troopers yesterday. The passage of the bill comes as two of the state's teacher unions have threatened to strike amid growing frustrations over salaries, problems with the state's insurance provider, and teacher vacancies. Dave Mistich brings us this report.
Senate Bill 267 calls for a 2% salary increase for teachers this year, with an additional 1% raise in each of the three following years, a 5% raise overall. School service personnel and state troopers would get a 2% increase this year, with an additional 1% increase in fiscal year 2020. While Republicans argued that fiscal responsibility is key, many Democrats begrudgingly stood in support of the bill, saying it shows a lack of priorities on behalf of the Republican majority. Delegate Riley Moore, a Republican, addressed those remarks.
For me, I think we both want to raise public employees' pay, want to raise teachers' pay, and the idea that one side doesn't and the other does, I think, is misleading in its narrative and disingenuous.
Delegate Marshall Wilson, also a Republican, says any additional hikes would cause higher taxes and inevitably put the burden back on teachers and other public employees.
I'm grateful for this opportunity to demonstrate my concern not only for our employees, our state public employees, but also for our employers, the ones who pay the bills, the taxpayers. This is a great opportunity to demonstrate our support, our appreciation for both classes of people, and interestingly enough, our employees are also our employers as taxpayers. So in doing this in a responsible and in a fiscally responsible and thoughtful way, what we're actually doing is we're providing them with that pay increase without then turning around and taking more taxes away from them.
Delegate Jeff Campbell, a Democrat and teacher himself, pushed back on the conservative approach to raising salaries. Like many other Democrats, he agreed to vote for the bill, but said it's not enough.
We've heard things like living within your means and fiscal responsibility. West Virginia's public employees don't need lectures on fiscal responsibility when many live paycheck to paycheck.
Amid growing talks of a possible teacher strike, Delegate Mike Caputo expressed concerns that the bill would not satisfy the demands of unions, who just this weekend were authorized by their members to call for a work action.
I predict that we're going to have thousands of screaming state employees filling these halls before we leave town. And I predict that we're going to have to revisit this because they are not happy. And rightfully so. Rightfully so. I believe we've neglected their service for too long in the state of West Virginia.
Delegate Sean Fluharty argued that the bill sends a message to teachers that the legislature gives priority to businesses and special interests rather than the people of the state.
What we do here is say to the public, just trust us. Just trust us, guys. We'll get it later. They're tired of that. I think I speak for every public employee when I say, we can't be trusted. We can't be trusted to do the right thing. What we can be trusted to do is follow the strings that are attached to our backs by the corporate sector that control us, control our votes,
to the gentleman,
control our agenda, Mr. Speaker.
In closing debate, House Finance Chair Eric Nelson acknowledged that he wished the raises could be more, but said the current version of the bill is the most responsible way forward. He also noted that the Senate's version of the measure called for a 1% salary hike for teachers each year for 5 years.
We finally have some positive prospects. And look at the first thing that we're doing. We're putting something positive forward. This is a positive step. This is a top priority. We've stepped up and are putting a plan in place that is significantly better than what the governor proposed and has improved over what the Senate proposed.
The bill passed on a 98-1 vote, with Delegate Fluharty being the only nay vote. With changes made in the House, the bill heads back to the Senate for concurrence.
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Dave Mistich in Charleston.
High school seniors in West Virginia who sign up to receive text message reminders for college preparedness are doing better in their first year of college, according to a recent study. And findings show this prep tactic is even more effective in rural areas. Liz McCormick explored why brings us this report.
5 years ago, select schools in West Virginia's Gear Up program, or Gaining Early Awareness and Readiness for Undergraduate Programs, participated in a national text message initiative to get high school seniors more prepared for college. That initiative spread statewide to all West Virginia high schools almost 2 years ago. A University of Virginia study found that high school seniors in West Virginia who received these text reminders were almost 7% more likely to persist through their first year of college. But among students from rural areas, that number jumps to 8%. Why?
The magnitude of the effect is larger for rural students than it is for students overall.
That's Katherine Meyer. She's a graduate student in education policy from the University of Virginia who helped author the study. She spoke with West Virginia Public Broadcasting via Skype.
Particularly rural students are coming from an area where we know from other studies they may be the first person from their community to attend an individual college because they're coming from smaller high schools. And so we saw these messages as sort of sending students messages of support, messages of belonging, and helping them feel like they were supported and welcome in the new community.
The University of Virginia founded the National Text Message Project. West Virginia was one of the first states to help pilot the project when it began 5 years ago. West Virginia's text message service is called Text for Success, and it's spearheaded here by the West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission. Students who opt into the program receive reminders throughout the year about things like financial aid deadlines and information about declaring a major. Most of these texts are automated, but if a student texts back with a question or concern, they'll more than likely hear from a real person, from either the West Virginia HEPC or a counselor at one of the program's 8 college partners. 20-year-old Concord junior Chelsea Goines is a first-generation college student and comes from a rural area. She commutes to Concord from Princeton, and she's involved in a lot of activities.
I currently work in Concord University's president's office, admissions office, and campus bookstore. I've cheered since my freshman year for our football and basketball teams. I also teach dance classes at Princeton Dance Studio and Princeton Health and Fitness Center.
A lot. Goines says a big part of why she's been able to stay organized and on top of all these activities while also doing well in school is Text for Success.
The text messages provide informational links and deadlines for orientations, FAFSA, enrollment checklists, sending transcripts, payment plans, and a lot more. It definitely helped me as a high school senior because of the texting services provided new information I had never heard of.
Goines says she found the program most helpful when it came to filling out the free application for federal student aid.
In high school, deadlines are kind of negotiable. If you're late, it's okay. But with FAFSA, if you're late, it's over. You know, you have to file it. That was a hard thing to understand, that there was a deadline.
Goines says she thinks the service has also been helpful overall for her age group because texting is how she and her peers communicate most frequently. It was for that reason West Virginia HEPC Chancellor Paul Hill says he wanted West Virginia to help pioneer this program because it's an efficient way to communicate with young people and because it helps those first-generation students.
We have found some mechanisms to reach student populations that we have not reached traditionally in the past, that through increased communication, we can have an impact on students by providing them with the types of information that they need to get. So I think it's an opening up a channel of direct communication to reach those students who need it most.
Hill says there are more than 22,000 students registered in the state's texting service. All high schools in West Virginia are involved in the program, as well as Bluefield, Marshall, Shepherd, Concord, Fairmont, and West Virginia State Universities, and Southern West Virginia Community and Technical College and West Virginia Northern Community College. Hill says the HEP's focus now is on pushing more college prep in elementary and middle schools. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Liz McCormick.
Lily Lenoir is a researcher at Penn State University. She's been studying aerial images to map natural gas development in Lycoming County in north central Pennsylvania over the last several years. Lenoir and her colleagues found that pipelines and roads have a bigger impact on forests and wildlife than actual well pads. The Allegheny Front's Kara Hossupple had a chance to talk to her about the study.
Can you describe the area in Lycoming County that you looked at for this study? Like, what's the forest like there? You describe it as core forest. And what's the Marcellus shale industry like there?
it's the Allegheny Plateau region, so a lot of deep valleys, a lot of steep mountains, and the forests are pretty much contiguous because there's very few people living there. There's a relatively limited road network. So in terms of wildlife, you have these hotspots of wildlife that you don't find in other parts of Pennsylvania. Something like timber rattlesnakes are locally quite abundant, but rare in the rest of the state. And prior to shale gas development, there were some activities in terms of logging, in terms of recreational activities. It's beautiful. People love to go there for canoeing, hiking, snowmobiling, you name it. But over the last 8 to 10 years, they expanded a lot of the roads that used to be there that were basically hidden and impassable by most people. And now there are two-lane highways that two semis can pass each other because that's what the shale gas industry required to build their infrastructure up there. When I first started, it was right during the boom in 2011 and 12. And that's when just your normal everyday country road up there was nonstop traffic, 24 hours a day. And then things have slowly tapered off. And for the last, since 2015, I would say, very little activity has occurred. And only recently, in this last 6 months, I would say, do we see drilling activities resuming again.
And you found that forest fragmentation from these roads and also pipelines is the major threat from the Marcellus shale industry to this forested area. What do you mean by fragmentation?
Basically chopping up a large block of forest into smaller and smaller pieces. And it might not look fragmented from a human perspective because we can cross that road and go from one patch of forest to the next, but other species wouldn't necessarily be brave enough or wouldn't have the mobility to do that. So if you have a flying squirrel, this arboreal nocturnal creature, they stay within the trees and they're not going to physically be able to cross that gap of a large widened corridor. And these roads were expanded to 20, 30 meters wide. Off the top of my head, 40, 50, 60 feet, depending on the type of pipeline and whether there's a road and a pipeline together. So it's a breaking up of one large contiguous block into smaller pieces. And when you do that, you change the dynamics of the forest. And by that, I mean, on that forested edge where you have that road, you now have increased solar radiation to the edge. And that changes the microclimate. So now you have drying out of the soil. Usually we consider up to 300 feet of a forested edge that has been affected, and we call that the edge effect of forest. It's no longer what used to be contiguous forest where that sun didn't hit the forest floor and it didn't have the wind blowing in, desiccating the soil, which changes your invertebrates. And there's a whole chain effect in terms of, I specifically focus on birds, and if their invertebrates are lower in density near the forest edge, then they won't go to those areas to feed. They will avoid the forest edge. But all animals treat edges differently.
I was reading in your study that there could be higher rates of predation along these forest edges.
That's right. If you're out there in the middle of the forest bushwhacking through lots of thick mountain laurel, you will appreciate these roads and you will use them to travel because it's so much easier. And a lot of predators use that for that same reason. You've got gray foxes, raccoons, and along the edges is where they can penetrate the forest and find whether it's a nest, eggs, young, etc. We focus on the neotropical migrants. They're migrating here from Central and South America, thousands and thousands of miles. They take months to make this journey, and they come to Pennsylvania specifically, and further north as well, and the forests. And they rely on these large blocks of forest away from people, away from predators. And they breed there. Their success can be impacted by fragmentation and other human disturbance.
One of the interesting things about your study is that you found there was a difference between gas development on private and public land. What is the difference and what is the impact on forests?
So in this area, within our case study of Lycoming County, about one third of it is public land. But there was a similar amount of development on both. So we were able to make this comparative study between the two and look at the systematic approach for how they built and created their infrastructure between the two landowners. And we found that public land, they hold the gas operators to a much higher and stricter level. They are a huge landowner, so they have a lot of leverage. It's not just a small private landowner that will say, okay, sure, you can put the pad on my property or not. These would say, you can put it in this region, but you cannot put it in this area because it's too close to this wetland. You know, we want to keep tourism high in this area. We don't want people to see it from Pine Creek Valley when they're down there fishing. And they also had more consolidation of infrastructure. So they had more wells per pad than what you typically find on private landowners. DCNR specifically is who we work with the closest. And they have a whole team of geologists, foresters, lawyers, you name it, working on behalf of coordinating gas development on public land. And they were able to negotiate a higher number of wells drilled per pad because you can have up to 15, 20 wells per pad.
If you had more pads, then you would need fewer roads and fewer pipelines because they would all be in one place and you wouldn't need to spread them out.
That's right. That's right.
Len Wall is a researcher and instructor at Penn State University. There's more about our work at AlleghenyFront.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.